This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
True crime fans will love Crime House True Crime Stories, a Crime House original podcast. Every Monday, you'll experience the most notorious true crime cases from that week in history, all linked by a common theme, from serial killers to disappearances to unsolved murders and so much more. Follow and listen to Crime House True Crime Stories, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Crime House Studios, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauly on King MOX.
Getting into hour number two of the program. Busy hour coming up. Jen Cease is going to join us in about 10 minutes or so. And then later on the hour, Lindenwood basketball coach Kyle Gerdeman is going to join us. We just heard Maria Kina take care of the 7 o'clock news inside of her newscast. Non-sports completely, but I wanted to mention this real quick because it's near and dear to my heart. The news that Mom's Deli is moving out of its location. We don't know if or when it's going to move into a new location. They've indicated that that probably will happen. But, man, what a bummer.
It's a total bummer. Oh. And, I mean, you could say it's kind of sports related because think of, like, Super Bowl, all the people that go in there and buy sandwiches for, and parties. And it's just been in such a neighborhood staple for so many years. And it's really cool because it's for people who haven't been there. It's a small little market, too, and family-owned, and it's just terrible to see this happen.
All right. So admittedly, what I'm about to say, I say it without knowing any of the details or any of the pretense. So maybe there's something going on that I don't know. So I leave myself open for that. But shame on the people who own that are ending the lease, or maybe they raised the rent so much that it became like it's a lease issue.
Yeah.
And that stinks.
They
don't want to go anywhere. They want to stay.
I don't understand that. I mean, it's been 47 years, and now all of a sudden, it's like, oh, bye-bye. That's it. We're not renewing.
Oh, just the worst.
I can say something comparable, just a couple of half a block away, is a Grand's Market. Good sandwiches, nice little grocery store. Been there for umpteen years, family-owned. So in the meantime, until Mom's comes back.
Okay. Yeah. Just hopefully it comes up. There's something about walking into the market atmosphere and the smell in there. And you all, like, I don't know anything about the family or anything, but you see the people working behind the counter and you just know that some of those people are in the family and everything. Like, it's just such a special place.
Absolutely. You mentioned the smell, which is another really cool thing. Because when you go into big places and chain places, you don't get that.
No.
You don't get it.
So, a bummer. All right. Thanks, Maria.
All right.
That's Maria Kina joining us. Just wanted to share that. Hopefully, if anybody from Mom's Deli is listening, we are encouraging you strongly to open up at a new location because we will miss you dearly. Just responding to what we were talking about last hour with the Nolan Arenado thing where I said, I think there's a disconnect here. There is an absolute disconnect on why Nolan Arenado should be moved. Because I went on and on and on about creating opportunities for young players and figuring out what you have for 2026 and beyond. And that's got to be the goal for 2025 because they're going through a reset. And I think they're going to be better than what a lot of people think they're going to be. I think this is going to be a team that if things go right can contend for a playoff spot. I am much more bullish on the Cardinals being good this year than a lot of people are. Maybe I'll be right. Maybe I'll be wrong. I think the distance between the team's ceiling and their floor this year, it's probably the biggest distance of any team in baseball. This could be a team that could go out and win 87, 88, 89 type games, or this could be a team that's down in the low 70s, right? Like that. Either one of those scenarios could play out depending on what happens. So yes, Nolan Arenado being a St. Louis Cardinal this year probably makes them a better team for this year. But that's not the point. That doesn't get you closer to being a team that has legitimate World Series aspirations and being a team that can consistently go on deep playoff runs, as we have seen this organization be that team for the vast majority of the last 10, 15, 20, 20 years, right? That's who they've been, and that's what they need to get back to. And you get back to that by making sure that your own cost-controlled guys are developing to what they're going to be. Got a text message when I was talking about Jordan Walker in the last hour. So Walker is too hyped. You don't know that. Third-party publications. This is not the Cardinals lifting up their own prospects. Third-party publications that have no vested interest in St. Louis Cardinals baseball listed Jordan Walker as one of the best prospects in all of baseball. Listed Nolan Gorman as one of the best prospects all in all of baseball. The Cardinals have not developed them correctly where they can reach their potential when they get to the major league level. Now, do those third-party publications get it wrong sometimes? Yeah, of course they do. Is there a possibility that Nolan Gorman is a 198 hitter who strikes out twice a game, and yeah, he's going to hit home runs when he makes contact, but he doesn't make contact enough, and that's just who he is? Yeah, there's that possibility. But it probably not. Probably not, because generally, prospects that are viewed as highly as Gorman was viewed, they will get to that, or they'll get to some level of that at some point in time. Not always, but generally there's something there. So it's up to the Cardinals now to help him get to his potential. Is there a chance that for the rest of Jordan Walker's career, all you got to do is throw a low and away pitch and he's just going to swing at that thing and miss, and he's going to pound everything into the ground, and that's just who he is? Yeah, that's a possibility. Is it a legit possibility? No. This is a guy who had superstar written all over him, and then since he's been in the big leagues, it hasn't really happened for him. A couple of years ago, had a really good second half of the season, but it hasn't been there. So you have to figure out if you can get those guys to where they need to be, and that is the number one goal for this season. If they happen to win a bunch of games doing it, great, but figure out what you have. We're going to talk with Jen Cease about City SC. We'll do that next here on KMOX. It's Gray Bar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. We're going to bring on a very familiar voice, someone who you hear sometimes hosting this very show when I am not here, but you hear her a lot on the broadcast for City SC over on our sister station, Y98, host of the St. Louis City Soccer Report, and now also hosting the City Spotlight podcast. We'll get into that in just a moment. It is Jen Cease. You follow her on Twitter at Jen Cease on air, J-E-N-S-I-E-S-S on air. Hey, Jen, how are you?
Hey, good. How are you, Matt?
I am good. It's good to be talking to you. And we are getting closer and closer to the start of the season for City SC. They're playing an event right now, playing some preseason games. They matched up against Salt Lake earlier today. I think that finished in a 1-1 tie. But what's just from a very general standpoint, I know you were at Media Day covering. You've been out of training a little bit. New head coach, the roster's a little bit tweaked as well. What are your general takeaways so far for this team, and how different they may look going into their 2025 campaign?
Yeah, I'm pretty excited. I think I'm almost excited as it was to get the team the first time when you really didn't know who these guys were, how Coach Carnell at the time would be approaching this game. Now we've got Coach Olaf Melberg, who's in with, you know, not saying that he's not going to change City's style, but of course, every coach has a different tweak, a different way they like to approach. He's a former center back at the highest level you can get. So he looks at the game from a defensive kind of approach as well. Looking back at the couple of games they had in Bradenton, you know, they lost 1-0 to the New England Revolution. They did win 1-0 over the New York Red Bulls. Coach Melberg told us it should have been more, that the attack is something that they're really looking to tweak, but that the defense has been pretty solid. And if we know from all those times last season when City had all those ties, you can probably remember that, and giving up goals in some key moments where we just had some letdown, I think that, you know, being very solid at City's back is going to be the focus of not only what Bradenton, Florida was, but now out at Coachella, and really tweaking things to see what works, what can we try? Conrad Wallum, who just scored today, is basically just in the United States, so really stepping on the pitch for the first time with the team, and he scores. We'll be interested to see where he fits in the whole picture. So a lot of moving parts yet to see what they've got before opening day on February 22nd.
You had a conversation with Klaus that I thought was really interesting, and you talked to him a little bit about him adjusting to a new coach and how much he maybe connects with Melberg. There's kind of a European connection between those two guys, not just for Klaus, but generally speaking, how are the players responding to having a new coach in Olaf Melberg?
You know, overall really well. The same theme seems to prevail no matter which one you're talking to, whether you're talking to an injured Chris Durkin who's coming back, or you're talking to somebody like Klaus who's up top, that some of it right now is kind of figuring out what does he want, what does he mean. But, you know, there's something that more than one player said about Coach Olaf Melberg, and I will quote, they said he brings an aura and a presence that demands respect, that, you know, he demands and calls on things from the players that he calls on for himself as a former player. He has a high level of expectation. So right now it's just really more understanding, like, where do you want me to be? How do you want me to move? And it is a little bit different than what they did before. They've been experimenting a little bit with a five-back system. We'll see if they bring that into the actual season. He's really focusing on that kind of second line of the attack, which we can also call rest defense. Mm-hmm. Rest defense is those people that are not in the main attack, but they're the first to jump the ball if possession is lost. So he's very focused on that, plus nonstop players. But they overall, it seems like, even though they haven't quite figured completely out what it is that they need to do to be together as a team, that it all seems to be working well. And the feedback they get from him is very clear, very positive, and he has a clear plan on how he wants to approach this next 2025 season.
If there's been any, I don't even want to use the word controversy, but if there's been, you know, one area of the way they play that there's been a lot of discussion about, it's been about the aggressiveness in the attack and whether or not you're going to have a, you know, one striker or two strikers on the field and things like that. What, yeah, what are you expecting? Is it going to be more attacking, or is it kind of more of the same with Melberg's spin on it?
You know, I think it's going to be, I think it's going to be different, which is, it's a, like a really, really broad thing. But when I'm talking about like the defense, I think it's one of those, he's going to focus really hard. There are a number of times where, you know, he talks about nonstop players, and what he means by that isn't just that they're physically fit, but they're not losing. We can look back on games with City last year where there were moments they seemed to have control of the game, and then due to physical fatigue or loss of mental focus, that they all of a sudden now the game's tied or they're down by one when they were clearly in hand, had the game in hand. So I think he's going to work really hard that defense is very, very solid. When it comes to the attack, talking a little bit with Tomas Ostrak, who made his appearance on the pitch today, it was great to see. He talked a little bit about the fact that Coach Melberg is also, they want to get in behind the defense, right? They want to attack as directly as they can. That's a very Swedish style of play, very direct, very a little bit less Brazilian, a little less pretty, but more direct. But he said, you know, something that stood out to me was he said, you know, he will say, if the attack's not there, don't rush it. In other words, don't try to make an attack out of something that's not there. Don't take what we would call, you know, low percentage chances. So we're not going to work the ball around for the sake of holding on to the ball. But if the attack's not there, we're going to rely on the fact that we have a second line, right? Our midfielders and whoever's going to be laying in low underneath those one or two, however many strikers Olaf decides to work with, and they will make sure we maintain possession so we can try and find another attack. So I think it's still going to be very direct. I think we're going to find it's a little bit less, quote, chaotic the way Bradley Carnell liked it.
We're basically 2 weeks from the start of the season. It's going to be on February 22nd, which is a couple Saturdays from now, or three Saturdays from now. 2 weeks from this Saturday would be the best way to say that. They've got two more exhibitions here at this Coachella Valley Invitational. Then they're going to have a closed-door friendly against San Jose, and then that's going to be it. That's going to lead them for about a week into the regular season opener. What are the things that they really need to lock in on and get better at here in these next 2 weeks, which really isn't that much time?
Well, yeah, honestly, it kind of goes back to your last question, is the players and coach are going to have to figure out how they want to approach. He's still, other than looking at game tape, he doesn't know them. They don't know him. So how does he want to approach? And then who fits in that approach? You know, for example, Célio Pompeu is not up to speed just yet when it comes to fitness and, you know, being ready fully to go into a full 90 at all. But he comes to mind as, how does a player who likes to dribble the defense, he loves the ball at his feet, he loves to hold on to it, how does a player like Célio fit into Coach Olaf's kind of structure? How does, you know, we saw Chris Durkin and Edward Louvin work really well together last year. Are they going to be part of his structure in that same way? So I think it's really a matter of how he wants to approach the way the game is played and then who fits in those pieces. And one other thing he talked about in the press conference, and he's Lutz has talked about it before too, is, you know, understanding that players need to be able to play multiple positions. We say this to them at the youth level, and if they're listening now, youth, the pros deal with this too. It, you know, you may have been City's right winger last year under John Hackworth or under Coach Bradley Carnell, but you may not be doing that this year. You might have to do something different in order to stay on that pitch. So I think it's just a matter of who's going to fit where in what structure is going to be most successful. And of course, that'll change as we play different opponents and how they, you know, prefer to play their styles of game.
The season will begin on February 22nd when City plays host to Colorado Rapids. Energizer Park, that's what we're calling it now. Energizer
right.
Park is the home. Of course, you'll be able to hear all those broadcasts on our sister station, Y98. Jen, a big part of that. And Jen, not only are you a big part of that, but it was announced earlier this week, we have a new KMOX Odyssey Sports podcast. It is the City Spotlight, and this is a really, really cool thing for City fans to be able to have at their fingertips.
Yeah, you know, honestly, from a personal selfish perspective, I really like it too, because in the last 2 years, when when you talk to players, many times you get these great nuggets of information, great ways of understanding them. And sometimes the only time you will hear them is on the Y98 pregame or on a KMOX St. Louis City Soccer Report, maybe on Sports Open Line. And there's been really no way for fans to refer back to those conversations. So I'm really excited that KMOX and Odyssey have put together the City Spotlight podcast. At the moment, it's just the interviews we have from this preseason with each player. 6 or 7 have been uploaded. I still have 3 more, I think, to edit and put in there. But we hope to have it as a place for latest news, interviews, press conference notes, analysis. Of course, when Dale Shilley or maybe Tom Ackerman do their interviews with Coach Olaf, those would be there as well. But kind of a one-stop shop for St. Louis City fans to go when it comes to what's the latest and greatest happening with their favorite MLS team.
Yeah, I encourage people to get the Odyssey app and search for City Spotlight, or wherever you happen to get your podcast, do a search for City Spotlight. Jen's got it all over her Twitter account, at Jen Seesaw on Air, so you can just click the link right there and find it. And there's lots of great stuff if you want to. Jen, one of the things I appreciate about you is you obviously really, really know soccer, but I always like that when you're talking to folks, there seems to be a personal part of it as well. And I think if people want to get to know these players a little bit more while also understanding what's going on from a soccer X's and O's standpoint, listening to you in these conversations is a great way to go about doing that.
Oh, thank you very much. I appreciate that. I mean, I know what it's like to play the game, of course, and I know that a lot of people get to know this game through playing gaming online. And what you have to also realize, too, is that, you know, these players aren't avatars that never run out of gas. These are players with personal lives and different approaches. So it's been really interesting to kind of get their individual takes on how it's going so far. One funny story is, like, you know, Marcel Hartl, the two-a-days that I was referring to as two-a-days when they were doing those at the beginning, aren't that foreign to European players, but we're a little bit new to some of the American pros. So just kind of hearing some of those differences from the guys regarding on the pitch, off the pitch, I think is invaluable for understanding them as players. And I hope it's okay to bring this up here too. I kind of got the news that, you know, we're looking to have a preseason show, and that may be coming up. I think it's set, Matt, on Tuesday, February 18th. We'll be looking to cover City ahead of their game on the 22nd. So fingers crossed, we have access to people like Diego Gigliani, maybe Coach Olaf Melberg himself, and maybe some other players, and get really hyped up for this first game at home against Colorado Rapids.
Yeah, really looking forward to that, and that's going to be on during the Sports Open Line hours, I believe. So that's going to be a whole lot of fun. Jen, thank you so much for taking the time with us today. We're going to be hearing a whole lot more of you here moving forward with the season getting started.
Thanks, Matt. Go City.
That's Jen Cease. We'll take a break, and we'll come back with we're going to talk with Kyle Gerdeman. He's the head coach of Lindenwood Men's Basketball. He joins us in just a moment. It's a Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX. It's Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. I want to take the opportunity to catch up with Lindenwood men's basketball coach Kyle Gerdeman. Lindenwood in a really key stretch right now. Their last two wins have each come against regional rivals in Southeast Missouri State and also SIUE, a really exciting win against them. They're going to go on the road to take on a couple teams that they beat at home earlier this year in Tennessee Martin and Tennessee State this weekend before getting back at against Moorhead State and Southern Indiana next weekend at home. So with that, let's bring Coach Gerdeman on to the program. Coach, thanks so much for taking some time with us today. How are you?
No, doing well. Appreciate you having us on, and you know, always enjoy talking about the program and Lindenwood and how we're growing a little bit. So thanks for having us on.
Yeah, you talk about the growth, and the team is still relatively new as a Division I team, and it seems like steady improvement, not just from your program, but really from programs across the entire athletic department. But you've had getting those wins that I just mentioned over the last couple weeks against SIUE and Southeast Missouri State, those are really big wins for your program.
Yeah, I agree. You know, it's been a good year for us. You know, from the non-conference being competitive and winning some games, and then getting into the league, and you know, getting off to a good start. You know, we put ourselves in a good position. But you know, you talk about the regional wins; those are always important. You know, beating Southeast Missouri State and beating SIUE, who's been at the top of the league for a handful of years, and finally getting a win over them was good. And I think it just shows the growth of our team. And the growth of our program. In general, that we are, you know, we're headed in the right direction.
How much fun is it fun for you kind of building this thing from the ground up?
Yeah, I enjoy it. You know, and a lot of people ask that. And, you know, I think obviously when we made the change, we knew the challenges that would be in front of us, but it really is enjoyable. Obviously, it's got its tough times, but that's part of it. But man, I think that if you get a chance to do it and build your own program from the ground up, you know, everything's not built just yet around wins and losses. You understand the process that it takes. It's really been fun, and it's really been fun this year with this group of guys to see the competitiveness grow, their fire to win improve over the years, and that's what you enjoy to see, is just the constant process of improvement and just being a more competitive program.
What's the culture like inside the athletic department? From, you know, the category of rising tide, lifting all boats, women's basketball is having a fantastic year doing what they're doing in the conference. We saw hockey earlier this year get a win against the number 9 team in the nation when they knocked off Wisconsin. It just seems like there's a lot of programs, yours included, and everybody's kind of lifting each other up.
Yeah, and that's a great point because, you know, in the fall we had some teams that had great success. You know, and you talk about our soccer program, you mentioned the hockey team with some big wins, and, you know, Jed and the football program had some big wins that, you know, late in the year, beating SEMO in a big rivalry game when they were nationally ranked. Our women's basketball team is doing fantastic. I think that as a group, you know, the program in general, the entire athletic department, I think, you know, kind of stepped into it with a lot of unknown, but a lot of competitiveness and a lot of coaches eager to prove that we can do this at this level and in the OVC. And I think that's what's been fun to watch, is I don't think anybody's really shied away from it. Everybody's put their head down and worked, and you're starting to see, like you mentioned, those teams have success. And it's really kind of a driving force, you know, that, you know, I think it creates the competitiveness within coaches, you know, that they see a program want to do well. And it gives you belief that you can do it. I think it gives you a challenge to see if you can get your team better. You know, I think all that stuff is fun, and we've got a great bunch of people here working hard.
Earlier in the week, we learned that Jadis Jones had won the OVC Freshman of the Week Award. This is nothing new for him. It's already the 8th time that he has won this award. He's going out there and averaging 11 points and 6 rebounds per game. What an impact you're getting from this guy as a very young player.
Yeah, you know, I think that, you know, I think we had a good idea of what we thought we were getting out of him. The fact that he's had this good a year, I don't think that we planned on that. I thought we planned on him being a big part of what we were doing, but the success that he's had is tremendous. But it goes way beyond that, because He's an unbelievable person. He's got leadership skills like beyond his years. This isn't your typical, you know, 18, 19-year-old freshman when it comes to some of the things that he does from a locker room standpoint, from a practice standpoint. So, you know, to see his success has just been really enjoyable to watch. And he's enjoyable to be around every day and coach. I mean, you know, and we've got a handful of guys like that, don't get me wrong. But, you know, when you come across a guy like that, that just, you know, just works. I mean, he's played through injuries. He had pneumonia last weekend, you know, wasn't going to sit out. I mean, he just, the character that he brings to your program is just tremendous.
Lindenwood men's basketball coach Kyle Gerdeman continuing to join us on a Graybar Sports Open Line. You look at your roster, and obviously recruiting locals a really important part of what you need to do, but he's a relatively local guy. You've got tons of local folks on the team. What has it been like for you as you have gone out into the community and been recruiting, and what's the reaction right now to Lindenwood basketball?
I think it's improved every year. You know, I think that there was always and so be it. I think there's always been a, you know, prove yourself, you know, part of the St. Louis and the region to, you know, prove why kids should come to Lindenwood. And we knew that. And I think we've been doing that. We've had tremendous support. We've built great relationships, you know, within the area. And I think we're starting to see that pay off, you know, again, with Jadis Jones, even being from Southeast Missouri, to Clayton Jackson from Cardinal Ritter, you know, getting the Nia Street Trail, who's a St. Louis kid, to come back home. You know, the doors are opening more than they had initially, and it's kind of right on track for what we wanted, because I think we're starting to see more and more support and more people, you know, young student athletes that are, you know, they're interested in what we're building, and they see the success that these guys are having as freshmen and, you know, wanting to come and be a part of that.
You mentioned Aeneas Futrell, also Markeith Browning. Those are the two guys on the roster that lead you in scoring. They each get you about 13 points per game. Can you talk to me? You've got pretty even scoring across the guys that you play a lot, 13, 13, the 11, the 9, the 6. But those two guys specifically, what do they bring you on a night-in, night-out basis?
Well, I think, one, consistency, but also the ability to have a big game. And that's what I think you always have to have. You know, we would love to get, you know, we strive to get five guys in double figures, which I think would be a fantastic offense. However, just really hard to do. But I like the balance that we have. But when you talk about those two guys specifically, you know, you're talking, and we mentioned this as a team before, you know, they have the ability to walk out here tomorrow within what we're doing and give you a 20, 25-point game. You know, Markeith did it last Saturday a couple weeks ago. Aeneas, I think, had 26 and 24 in our two games. You know, we've had Jadis Jones has had 21 in a road game at Southern Indiana. So I think the consistency that you get from them, but then again, the talent level that they bring to you, that, you know, they can carry you for a while, and you need that at times. You know, their shot making ability, their playmaking ability, you know, they take that on their shoulders every game at the top of the other team's scouting report. And I think they've done a fantastic job of leading us in that area.
I know paying attention to your team and your league is a full-time job on its own, but right now in the region, Mizzou and Illinois are each top 25 teams. St. Louis University has been awesome since A-10 play started. We talked about SIUE earlier. They're a great story in the area as well. Is it enjoyable right now to be a college basketball coach in this region where there are so many teams playing at a high level?
Yeah, without a doubt, because I think it's just, you know, I think when basketball in the state is good, it's just fun for everybody, and I enjoy to watch it. You know, like, you know, we played Missouri earlier in the year, and you know, I was just blown away with the depth that they had, and to see them continue to use their depth and how they've kind of turned their program around from a year ago has just been fun to watch. You know, I think what they're doing at St. Louis U, you know, the style of play and you know, winning close games, and you know, kind of struggled through the non-conference a little bit, but now find themselves right in the mix of the A-10. It's just fun to watch, and I think it's fun to be a part of as a basketball coach, and just see how good basketball can be. Because like I said, I think when those teams are good, I think it's good for everybody because it just represents our state so well.
This weekend, you go on the road against Tennessee Martin and Tennessee State. These are two teams that you beat at your place earlier. Nothing tougher in sports than winning on the road in college basketball. So certainly it's a challenge for you this weekend. But is there added confidence when maybe you beat a team at home early in the season when you go see them for a second time and it's at their place?
Yeah, I hope so because, you know, we played well against both of them. You know, we beat Tennessee Martin at the buzzer, actually, and we beat, you know, Tennessee State. We were down at halftime, came back, and played really well in the second half. So, you know, going into it that, you know, you can find success against these teams. But then, you know, you flip the coin over and, you know, they're just dying to beat you. You know, they probably feel like they could have played better. So you understand the challenge that's in front of you when you go on the road. But, you know, I think for us, it's just finding consistency in our play, you know, trying to play well every night out, regardless if it's home or on the road, if we beat the team, if we haven't beat the team. You know, we've just got to stay, you know, we've got to stay even keel with it and continue trying to play the rest of the year out.
Lindenwood on the road this weekend. They'll be back the weekend of Thursday, February 13th against Morehead State, and then Saturday, February 15th when they match up against Southern Indiana, both those games at Robert F. Highland Arena in St. Charles. All the detail at lindenwoodlions.com. Coach, thanks so much for your time. Best of luck the rest of the way, and hopefully we can catch up with you again down the line.
Thank you very much. Love to do it anytime.
That's Kyle Gerdeman. He's the head coach at Lindenwood, and I just think everything going on at Lindenwood is a fantastic story as they continue this transition into Division I, still very early in their Division I status, and picking up a win recently against SIUE. That was a great win for them, and we'll see what they can do this weekend. We'll take a break. We'll come back, and we will wrap up this edition of the program. It's a Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
Back at it for one final time tonight on a Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. My name is Matt Pauley. When we get done here, though, you get a little bit more of me. Tonight it is the Gas House Gang. 8 o'clock to 9 o'clock, myself and Kevin Wheeler on tonight's edition of the program. For those of you not familiar with the Gas House Gang, it is a show that we stream live on YouTube and Twitter and Facebook and all our social media channels every weekday afternoon at 12 noon. If you watch it live, you can interact with it by leaving comments and things like that, and then we replay it at night at 8 o'clock or after games get over and things like that. So we do have the Gas House Gang rolling your way this evening. Make sure to be tuned in for it. It's going to get started just after the 8 o'clock news. And also a reminder, tomorrow it is the Countdown to Opening Day show from 6 o'clock to 8 o'clock. Myself and Mike Claiborne will have you. The featured guest tomorrow is going to be former Cardinal and now television analyst Brad Thompson. He is going to be with us for much of the show coming up tomorrow, and that's going to be the final Countdown show that we do where we are not originating from Jupiter, Florida. Klaibs has already made his way to Florida. I'm still in St. Louis, but that will not be the case come next week, as on Monday, I'm going to be traveling down to Florida as we get set for our Cardinals spring training to get underway. We've been busy. Lots of interviews. Hopefully you've enjoyed the folks that we've been able to talk to. So lots of interviews and then lots of things going on between all the Cardinals stuff and the Arenado smoke that is starting to puff out once again in terms of a potential trade, talking a little bit about the Billikens and what they did last night in college everything. I mean, we've just had a really, really busy show. Unfortunately, the Blues have kind of been pushed back, and I don't have a lot to say. I don't have a lot to say about the Blues at this moment. They are in a critical, critical, critical stretch. They are playing every game at home between now and Thursday, February 27th. Now, the Four Nations break is inside of that, so it's a six-game homestand, essentially, that's going to be broken up in two. They'll play their final game before the break on February 8th and their final game or their first game after the break on February 22nd. They have not been especially good at home this year for whatever reason, and that's something that they got to get fixed at some point in time, whether it's this year, whether it's future years, if they're not going to be a playoff club this year. At some point in time, you got to figure out how to play at home and be successful at home and make that, you know, it's such a great environment for Blues games, and Blues fans are incredible in the way they support the team. You got to be able to live off that and win most of your home games. So that's something they're still working on. I was frustrated yesterday in an overtime loss to Edmonton because that's a game that you should win. Anytime, right now, with where this team is at, if you've got an opportunity to win a game, you got to do it. And they were up by a 2-1 score up until about 2.5 minutes to go in the third period. And that's when Edmonton gets the equalizer, and then they end up winning in overtime. And you just, like, I get it. Edmonton's good. They've got really good players. Connor McDavid scoring their first goal of the night in the second period. Like, I'm not saying they need to beat Edmonton because Edmonton's a beatable team. I'm saying they need to win that game last night because they had a one goal lead in late in the third period, and you just have to find a way to win that. And I'm not trying to like dumb things down here and not like break things down and all that. Like, I understand there's more to it than what I'm saying, but there's really not a two, because they're at a point right now with the ground that they need to make up to be a playoff team. They're at a point right now where if there is a win on the table, they have to grab it. They have 53 points right now. Calgary is holding the final playoff spot with 59 points. So they're 6, and also a Vancouver at 59 as well. They're 6 points behind Calgary and Vancouver. They're tied with Utah, so they've got some teams that they need to jump over. It's not easy to go make up 6 points. That's not something that they're just going to be able to easily do. So they got to figure this thing out. And from here to the end of the season, if there is a game they're winning in the third period, they have to win that game. And I know they get the point and everything that goes along with getting to overtime. Doesn't matter. You got to get... When you've got an opportunity to collect 2 points, you got to go collect 2 points, and they were unable to do that last night, unfortunately. We'll see what they do as this homestand does continue. They play again tomorrow night. They'll match up against the Florida Panthers, so that's certainly not an easy matchup. Florida is good. That'll be a 7 o'clock puck drop inside of the Enterprise Center coming up tomorrow night. All right, thanks to everybody who joined us on the program today. We had a lot of guests. I mean, we don't always have a lot of guests on the program, but we had a bunch of them, today. My thanks to Bernie Miklas, also Joe Roderick, Jen Cease, Kyle Gerdeman, all with us over the last couple hours. As always, if you missed any of it, you can always check out the Sports Open Line podcast. That's available at KMOX.com. It's available on the Odyssey app. So just do a search for Sports Open Line. And then coming up next, we do have the Gas House Gang. A lot of Nolan Arenado talk, a lot of Cardinals talk, a lot of discussion about who can take a step forward and whether you prioritize offense or defense, what it's going to look like with Wilson Contreras at first, how good can he be compared to elite first baseman across Major League Baseball. Those are just some of the topics that we're going to get into, myself and Kevin Wheeler. It's the Gas House Gang, and it begins after the 8 o'clock news. I'll be back with you tomorrow night alongside of Mike Claiborne for the Countdown to Opening Day show. Look forward to talking to you then. This has been a Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.